The following program is part of the Inner Circle Podcasting Group. Go to innercirclecomics.com for more high-quality podcasts.
Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Caldell.
Your beloved patrol is doomed.
G'day and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the podcast where some waits are longer than others for Doom Patrol fans who are waiting for the comic to come back in one form or another.
This is true. Yes, hello, I'm Mike. Welcome to Waiting for Doom. You can find me on Twitter at AvantGarve. Yeah, you can find our show Twitter account there, Wilfred, at WFTPod. You can reach us on waitingfordoom@gmail.com. We're also on Facebook. And all our episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Podbean.com. And we are also members of the Inner Circle Comics podcasting group.
Yeah, I'm Paul, and you can find me on Twitter at reading_Hicks. And what else can we tell you? Well, let me tell you a little story about the internet. firstly, when I get on the internet, you know, I'm interested in comics, and I start to search for like-minded people whose opinions I respect. And I think through the magic of Twitter, I eventually became aware of a guy who does comic book reviews on his blog called Too Dangerous for a Girl. Ooh. Which is not a sexist statement. It's actually a Legion reference from the classic days of Legion of Superheroes. And I was pleasantly find that this guy does reviews, and more often than not, I agree with him. And he did it with wit and style and aplomb. And he became a fan of our show. And if you've ever listened to a comic podcast, you've heard his name dozens of times, because he's involved with every single podcast in one way or another in the feedback sections. So today we're welcoming to the show Martin Gray from Edinburgh, Scotland, who's here to help us look at Infinite Crisis.
Hooray!
Hello there, lads. Thank you for having me. It's a real honour.
Oh, thanks for joining us, Martin. It's great to finally get you on the show. And we had a few technical difficulties beforehand, but we're all here now. It's all good to go.
Anything from the bio you want to share, Martin? You've had a little bit of a comic history beyond just being a fan, I believe.
Let's see. Yes, I've been reading comics since I was a little boy, which was quite a while ago. And I've been involved in Legion of Superheroes fandom, been in a Legion Amateur Press Alliance for about 30 years, 30, oh. Not 13. I know. And I spent a few years in the 90s working for a company called London Editions Magazines /Fleetway/Egmont, which produced reprints of DC Comics for the British market. And we also produced the likes of My Little Pony, Sooty Comics, Bugs Bunny reprints, all sorts. I've written My Little Pony. I've coloured My Little Pony.
Wow.
Life since then has been a letdown.
You're not allowed to mention ponies on the show.
Oh, yes. Yes. I don't know if anyone saw Twitter today, but oh my God, someone had a field day with ponies. Oh, jeez. Have a look at what Wilfred put up there, if you haven't already. Oh, sorry. Ponies. Get my goat up. Anyway, Martin, as you were. Sorry. Continue.
I'm intrigued and more than a little frightened. But no, all is well. But yes, no, these days I do my little bit of blogging. I do a little bit of writing for panels.net. I just pop up hither and yon, you know, keeping busy.
Excellent.
We're all the richer for it. You're very entertaining.
You're very kind.
All right. So usually we talk about the week in comics. So what been happening, but we could stretch this out to what's been happening the last several weeks in comics for any. Martin, what have you been enjoying?
I've been catching up on a couple of sales from Comicology on the Valentine's Day sale. I bought three collections of Simon and Kirby romance comics, you know, the ones that pretty much invented the genre.
Oh, yes.
And to complement them, I also bought a comic called Weird Love, with stories like Help, I'm in Love with a Lunatic.
I know the series you're talking about. This is the one from IDW, I think.
I think so. Yeah, it's not. It doesn't seem so much weird as just life.
Yeah. Yeah, there was one there about a larger girl and the troubles she went with trying to find a man and her parents getting involved. And yeah, it wasn't weird. It was just like, that's how things were back those days.
Absolutely. So. And there's a feature about dealing with a girl with a big bottom.
Yes. Classy stuff.
Oh, I like to learn my comics history. And I've also been there for Christmas. I got / bought myself the 3 volumes from, I think it's from Taschen, of Superman, Wonder Woman and Batman collected World War II stories.
Oh, wow.
And they're great, lovely, lovely production values. Little pictures on every corner of the page of people with bombs and rockets and things. And it's just fun to see how the patriotism / jingoism manifested back in the 40s. And they're just jolly good old nice superhero stories.
Cool.
Wow, that's a lot of big words in one sentence for this show, mate.
Sorry about that.
Oh, look, we try and class it up. That's why we have guests on.
Oh, no, come on. Do not undersell yourself, lads. We're classy buggers.
Crap tons of class, we do.
Oh, shitloads.
I try. Other than that, I've been reading this past week. I'll probably spare you the last several weeks, but this past week I've also enjoyed a few of the mainstream comics. As ever, I've enjoyed the Batman Superman. It seems wrong still that Batman gets top billing in a World's Finest comic, but Batman Superman by Tom Taylor and Robson Rocha, which has been going back pretty much telling a pre-crisis type story. That's been fun.
Strange Tom Taylor.
Oh, yes, indeedy. And I've been reading Enjoying Ms. Marvel by G. Willow Wilson and Nicole Leon. That's been a hoot. And is anyone reading Al Ewing's Avengers books?
Is he just doing the Ultimates Avengers?
He's doing the Ultimates and New Avengers.
Oh, okay. No, I'm not reading either of those, no.
I've been reading the Ultimates. That's pretty good.
Yeah, I do. I love the way he balances cosmic grandeur with, you know, really human heroes.
Yeah, I have a bit of problems placing it in the Marvel Universe. It just doesn't feel like it belongs. But, you know, I think it feels like everything's just been thrown up in the air and hasn't really landed right yet.
Oh, yes. I mean, I have no idea what the continuity is nowadays. I pretty much jumped off during the Secret Wars because I just wasn't interested.
Right. Yeah. What about you, Mike? What have you been getting down with?
Well, to be honest, not a hell of a lot. Just without going into too much detail, part of the reason we took a bit of a hiatus is that I had certain family dramas, shall we say, that needed to be taken care of before fun stuff like comics. But thankfully, that's pretty much all resolved now, so I'm getting back into catching up. However, my to-read pile is shocking at the moment. I counted just before we started tonight, and I have 71 comics sitting in my pile, which, if anyone knows me, that is just a ludicrous amount to catch up on. So
that is a long trip to the bathroom.
It is. It is. I'll be in there for quite some time, maybe, if I take up certain other people's reading manners. Yeah, so I haven't really, I've been buying the comics because, you know, I like to have them there, but it's getting to the stage where when I do finally get round to sitting down and getting caught up, I will have, I guess, 7 issues of Batman and Robin Eternal waiting there for me, and, you know, 2, sometimes 3 issues of different titles, which will be nice to be able to read them all in a row, but I've not got there yet. So yeah, January for me was a bit of a bummer all around, and we also lost Bowie and Rickman, so yeah, I've unfortunately not been having a lot of the fun stuff going on this past month. But things are on the mend. They're getting better. And I just want to say thanks to all the listeners as well for still supporting the show and actually still listening to it while we were off the air, so to speak, because it's just really encouraging to see that people are still interested in the show and the Doom Patrol and what Paul and I rabbit on about each week. So thanks, guys.
Yeah, there's been some nice messages and people saying that they miss us, which is kind.
It is. It's very sweet. Yes.
We do. You're a big part of our week.
Oh, thanks, Martin. Oh,
shucks. Blushing.
What about you, Paul? What have you been getting into?
Oh, okay. I have a comic from a local person.
Wow.
Yeah. I work for a pretty big organization, and someone was on one of the message boards at work saying they had a comic that they'd produced, and it was they'd submitted it to Comixology, and that, you know, piqued my interest because, you know, I'm one of those people who thinks about doing things and doesn't do them, and here's someone who thinks about doing them and does them. Mm. So there's a bloke called Tim Stiles, mm-hmm. And he has produced a comic called Cthulhu Williams, which is a... well, it's a good way to describe it. It's like BPRD Down Under, I would call it.
Wow, okay.
So that's pretty cool. And he basically put it all together himself, commissioned an artist called Mortimer Glum, and, yeah, produced a pretty nice comic. And I heard that there was a hard copy going into one of the Canberra comic shops, so I hustled over and got a copy just so I could have a look. And, you know... pleasantly impressed by it. It's quite fun, and
so it's like a one shot then.
Yeah, he says he's going to do some more, so looking forward to it. Yeah, but this is an issue zero.
Okay.
And yeah, I'll tweet out when it comes onto Comixology, because I believe it's on the way. It's been accepted, but it has not yet appeared. So it's quite a bit of fun. It's, you know, it's Aussie. It actually mentions a town I drive past twice a day, which is quite cool. Yeah, things like that. So
I'm just looking at the pictures, some of the images on Google here, and it looks seriously impressive.
Yeah, and I was worried it would be really pompous, but it's actually fun as well. So
cool.
It's it's very good. So shout out to Tim for getting that up and running. Yeah. That's very impressive.
Yeah, we'll definitely have to share that online as well. Yeah, that's great.
That's brilliant. Yeah, it says on their Facebook page, roughly 2 days and 10 hours until it goes up, and that was yesterday, so it should be dropping any minutes, really.
Wow. Excellent. Well, thanks, Martin. You're excellent at research live as well as in the background. Yes. Other than that, getting into Judge Dredd.
Cool. I've
read Judge Dredd in the past, and... heard some good stories were coming out recently, and so I've been reading Day of Chaos, which is I'm really enjoying it. It's very good, and that's written by Rob Williams, who's making a name for himself with comics like Martian Manhunter, not okay. Martin Manhunter.
I'll take it.
That was us before we recorded. We were hunting for Martin.
He's my favourite, Martin.
Ah, true.
Anyway.
I'm too young for that one.
So, yeah, John Wagner's back writing Judge Dredd, and it's really good. Like, it's, you know, just go out and read it. Start with Day of Chaos. It's a great place to jump on. Yeah. Cool.
Excellent.
Yes. But that's it. That's it probably for my 6 or 7 weeks in comics.
Okay. Fantastic.
Is that a ticking that I can hear?
It can't. Well, it has to be. It's only been 7 weeks, but yes, it's the return of the mighty Doom Clock.
Good to see it's still working.
I put fresh batteries in before we started. So, looking at the face of the mighty Doom Clock once again, it's still telling us, unfortunately, that the last volume we had for the Doom Patrol was Volume 5, which finished with Issue 22 back in July of 2011, which actually went on sale May 4th of that same year. So it has been 4 years and 41 weeks since we last had a Doom Patrol book.
It's just shocking and wrong.
Yes. Yes, it is. The last appearance of the team was 27 weeks ago in two different comics. So just over 6 months ago, we had them turn up in All-Star Section 8, Issue 3. They appeared in a big splash page of all the Justice League-type heroes. And also in Justice League United number 12, where Stargirl met up with the team when she was trying to get Robot Man join the JLU on their next mission. But this week in Doom Patrol history, for the princely sum of approximately $50 American, you could get the Doom Patrol Archives Volume 3 back in 2006.
Oh.
Yes. This contained coloured reprints from the original 1960s run of the Patrol, specifically issues 98 through to 105, and it also includes issue 48 of the Challenges of the Unknown, which completes the crossover story between the two teams. And we actually discussed that very crossover with guest and friend of the show, Doug Zavisha, back in episode 36. That was a good ep. It's always good to have a guest on.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I've always wanted to track down the archive editions, but they're kind of rare these days.
They're pricey. A bit pricey.
Yeah.
Several, boys. Several.
Yeah. I'll probably just keep tracking down the single issues personally. But anyway, that's it for the Doom Clock this week.
Before we go much further, I thought we ought to do a little lightning news round because we've had a little bit of Doom Patrol news while we've been away, haven't we?
Yeah, that's true.
We have.
There are rumours. Bleeding Cool has intimated that the Gerard Way, Betty Cloonan Doom Patrol is not dead. And it's getting another look at. So, And at the same time, we've started to hear things about DC Rebirth. So we're in the no man's land between. We've had the hints of it coming, but we don't know exactly what it is yet. But it looks like it's not a reboot. That hot off the press today. Not a reboot.
Apparently the image for it has been updated to say Rebirth. It's not a reboot. It never was. So it's a bit interesting.
They've said that previously.
Yeah.
I mean, last time everybody got new boots and new collars.
Yeah. So there's a good chance that Doom Patrol could be included in Rebirth. Presumably one of DC's things is they want to make money out of it, and probably Gerard Way doing a Doom Patrol comic sounds like money to a lot of people. So it could be back on the cards.
Is Gerard Way really famous in the real world? I don't know him apart from comics.
I went to see him at the Opera House with Grant Morrison, and the queue to get his autograph was so long I was actually able to bypass that just to get Grant Morrison's autograph.
Wow. Okay.
And he's in some popular music combo.
Yes.
Yeah, he was in a...
Yes, he was in a band called My Chemical Romance that was quite popular a few years back.
Fair to say, I think they had one brilliant album.
I don't own any
of their stuff. I just have to search it out.
Yes. And he also wrote a series called The Umbrella Academy, which I've not read, but was apparently quite good.
Gotcha.
Yep, I'd vouch for that. I've got that.
Mm-hmm.
And he was an intern for DC Comics at one point, so...
There's a foot in the door right away.
That is impressive.
So, yeah, chances of a new Doom Patrol comic. There's some online speculation that it's probably on the list for DC, so we'll watch this space and we will talk about it if it happens.
Yeah, look, so, I think given the amount of different stuff they tried with New 52 when that first came out, that surely they want to try a new bucket of different stuff, I guess, for want of a better expression. And I don't see why Doom Patrol couldn't be part of that new launch. I mean, their time is due, clearly. You know? Not that I'm biased or anything.
Yeah.
Definitely. Time to throw a robot man at the wall and see if he sticks.
Or at least we'll get a Harley Quinn in the Doom Patrol comic, at least.
Oh, gee.
Marvellous.
Actually, let's not. But I see where you're coming from.
Go
you know,
on.
She sells books.
Say?
Yeah, they've got to sell books. And that's the main thing. You've got to remember that about DC. They have to sell books.
Yeah, that's true.
It helps.
It helps the bottom line and, you know, keeps them in business. So, yeah.
Anyway, shall we move on to this steaming pile of Infinite Crisis before us?
Let's.
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
So today on the show, we're discussing Infinite Crisis. And the reason we're discussing this is because it was a big crossover event for DC in 2005. But one of the things it did was it did it a fair bit for the Doom Patrol at the time. It sort of recast their continuity and reset a few things that had been happening. Mostly, you could consider it sort of fixed some of the things that happened in John Byrne's Doom Patrol. And not saying that's a bad run, though it is, but saying that it changed. He changed continuity from what was had gone before, so this was the chance to reset things and sort of find a middle ground with continuity there. Yeah. So what can we say about Infinite Crisis that hasn't been said? Perhaps if we talk a little bit about the build-up to Infinite Crisis. Which,
now, this I'll be interested to hear from you guys, because I didn't read any of the limited series that took place before Infinite Crisis started. I've just got the trade paperback of the main series. So I was reading it this afternoon before we recorded. And from the very first couple of pages, I've always felt like, and I remembered feeling this same way the last time I read it. And that's, I've walked into the middle of something and it's not as clearly detailed as I think it could have been. So I'd love to know whether you guys think I should go back and find those preceding series or not.
I would say don't bother. I mean, I was there at the time and I read, I think, all 52 issues of Countdown to Infinite Crisis every week, thinking it's going to be good. Jimmy Olsen will do something exciting. Atom will do something interesting. And it went on and on and on, and it just wasn't good at all. And then had little to do with the actual crossover when the crossover proper.
Wow, okay.
So I would say certainly don't bother with that. Really don't. And there were some mini-series that led into it as well, which I think had a little bit more to do with it. But as I can't actually recall a great deal about them, I would say, again, don't bother. Really don't bother. Just dive in. You can do it. You don't need this.
I don't know if I agree with you, Martin. I'm sorry.
Ooh.
I was pretty invested in the DC Universe in the lead-up to Infinite Crisis, and I thought... editorially, they had their act together at the start, because there was a lot of parts of Infinite Crisis seeded early, and the writers had a lot to contribute in that, like Greg Rucker and who else was there? Oh, Jeff Johns, and they were all sort of putting bits and pieces of the lead up to Infinite Crisis in their books. And then at the same time, they launched a whole bunch of miniseries. But, yeah, I think a lot of the sticking point for that people have for an Infinite Crisis, and the thing that sets the tone, is they killed Ted Kord Blue Beetle right at the start of it all.
Yeah.
And made Maxwell Lord a bloodthirsty villain suddenly. Hmm. So, and that was a bit hard for some people to swallow, I think. But at the time, I thought it had an excellent build-up. And they had four miniseries that were... sort of Countdown to Infinite Crisis, and there was Day of Vengeance, which was about all the magic in the DC Universe. There was Villains United, which was sort of like a secret society of villains story, and that really became...
Yes, that was excellent.
Yeah, that became Secret Six. The Rand Thanagar War, which showed what was happening in space, and...
The OMAC.
Which was Greg Rucker doing a sort of DC sci-fi thriller, but with a lot of art, I thought. He's a good writer, and that he was that led into what became Checkmate for him later on. But they did have, I mean, one of the big things that came through in different titles was the villains were getting organized and banding together. And this sort of spun out of Identity Crisis, where the villains had got wind of the heroes basically changing people's minds with magic. So the whole Dr. Light thing, you know, another controversial story which some people can't take. But because of that, the villains have said, all right, the heroes aren't playing by the rules anymore. We need to get organized against them.
Right.
Yeah, and there was a Justice League issue where the Watchtower was blown up, and that happened immediately before Infinite Crisis started. So, you know, for instance, in the beginning of Infinite Crisis, the Watchtower is blown up and you don't know why.
Exactly. That's exactly where I'm coming in from, because I...
Watchtower blows up, take a drink.
Exactly, yeah, and that's where I came in, because I was aware of those titles and how it sort of tied in, but... You know, open the page and the Watchtower's gone, and there's these massive battles going on in space, which, you know, after the fact, you realize, okay, that's to do with the Rand Thanagar War. But if you're coming in cold, you're kind of like, okay, sure, everything's in jeopardy. Okay.
Yeah. And they did a lot to basically fracture the relationship between Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman. So they'd all basically committed a sin leading into it where Wonder Woman had killed Maxwell Lord because he was using mind control, and she basically decided the only way to stop him was to kill him, which she did, which Superman and Batman don't approve of. Batman had gotten paranoid about being mind controlled and created Brother Eye, which ended up being an evil robot satellite, which created the OMAX, which became like these robot things that appeared around people randomly. Yeah, and Superman was mind controlled by Maxwell Lord, leading to him trying to kill Batman. So there was a lot of damage to their relationship leading into this, which, it's useful to know all that.
Yes, it would have been, yes.
I just got so bored with the OMAX and their text speak and their little square lettering fonts, and we've had now about 15 years of OMAX. Back then it was just every panel seemed to be full of OMAX.
Yeah, well, safe to say, I reckon powder. Editorial pushed this a lot further than it should have been. It expanded it much further than it should have been. Yeah, you know, there's something to be said for self-contained events that don't spill out everywhere, and this one spilled out everywhere. I mean, you could get parts of it in Nightwing issues, in Breach, in JSA. All sorts of comics were tied into Birds of Prey. It just went out of control and everywhere. But it was working sales-wise. This was very exciting at the time, and the readers, you know, sort of caught that vibe as it went out. But then you get to the actual Infinite Crisis, and I think a few of us went, eh, after a little bit, because the premise of this is this is so involved in DC Universe history.
Yes.
At the end of Crisis of Infinite Earths, the multiverse was basically boiled down to one universe, and there were a few heroic refugees from the multiverse who ended up outside the new Earth, and that's Superman, so Earth 2 Superman, Lois Lane from Earth 2, and Superboy.
Yes.
And Alexander Luthor, who's the son of Lex Luthor out there. Anyway, yep.
I think he was like the son of Lex Luthor from Earth 3. Yeah.
Yeah, and they were all noble people who ended up on the outside of this, you know, taking sort of a watchtower role over the DC Universe. So as this opens, they are appalled by what they're seeing in the DC Universe, which reflects what Martin was feeling. So they talk of intervening, but Superboy has actually gone from being a hero to a villain and actively started to intervene and is getting into the DC Universe. And this is where it all gets weird, because basically these beloved characters end up driving all the villainy of this. So yeah. Luthor ends up controlling the secret society and, you know, causing all sorts of havoc and evil and everything and organizing them. Superboy is like a colossally powerful moron who's running rampant. And
that is kind.
Yes. So, Geoff Johns, who wrote Infinite Crisis, sort of used Superboy as a metaphor for the disgruntled fanboy who's saying, I don't like this, it sucks, and I want everything back the way it used to be.
As I was reading his dialogue, I could picture people I've encountered online who say very similar things about comics to what Superboy Prime was saying and feeling. And I just thought, holy cow, that's scary.
Yeah, and that could have been artfully done with a bit of, absurdity or balance. But Johns combines that with ultra-violence inflicted by Superboy. So in the middle of Infinite Crisis, there is Superboy decimates the current Titans of the day.
Yes.
And not just you know, kills them, rips them in half, decapitates, you know, limbs get removed. Mm-hmm. You know.
There was a head removed from a, I think her name was Cheetah or Chitara.
Panther.
Oh, so close. He sort of backhands her and her head flies off, you know? It's...
Yeah.
So... Oh, I didn't mean to knock your head off.
He didn't.
That's the thing. He's so powerful and he's so deluded into his mission. He's such a whiny teenager. He's I couldn't find anything redeeming or such an unpleasant character all around is how I found him. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was great that he became like a mainstay villain for so many events after this, you know, the Sinestro Cold War and all that.
Yeah.
He just kept coming back. You couldn't get rid of him after this, which was very frustrating. But, I mean, it was, you know, it had George Perez art on covers. It had Phil Jimenez art inside. It was, you know, pretty well done, although a lot of art got redone between the rushed out last issue and the trade or the collection.
Okay.
Because a few splash pages that got finished. So, yeah, and it ended up, I think it sullied the name of a few, you know, of Superboy from Prime, and it certainly sullied the name of Alexander Luthor. Mm-hmm.
Yes,
it was
Alexander
exciting.
Luthor had a red perm. It would never end well.
Yeah. But, I mean, one of the most interesting things for us is the effect it had on the Doom Patrol. So we went into this with the Burn Doom Patrol, which had Rita for some reason, which never explained why she was back. But we also had Beast Boy running with the Titans, who didn't remember any history with the Doom Patrol now. And Geoff Johns, around this era, he could not leave a little bit of inconsistent continuity standing. He always had to try and fix it. So one of the things was Superboy Prime is punching through the walls of reality, and his punches start to change the DC universe as we know it. And one of the things that happened is there's all sorts of changes rippling around the Doom Patrol. So the Chief, you know, suddenly remembers his past with the team. The current team seems to get sidelined out of this. Beast Boy remembers his connection to Rita. And most of this played out in Titans issues, didn't they, Martin?
They did indeed, particularly Teen Titans 32.
Yeah, do you want to take us through that?
I can do indeed, yes. So it's March, cover date is March 2006, and it's Teen Titans 32 from, and ignore the cover credits, they are mostly incorrect, Geoff Johns writer, Todd North, penciler, Sean Parsons, Nelson, and Larry, or perhaps Larry, L-A-R-Y, Stucker Inker, not Baron Strucker, Phil Baldwin, letterer, Jeremy Cox, colorist, I hate that spelling, Jeremy Cox, cover by Tony S. Daniel and Ken Conrad, on which Raven's knee is impersonating Batman. Take a look, I'm not kidding. And the title of the book is Doomsday. So the book opens with clone Connor Kent at the Kent farm in Smallville watching Superman on television. He's been saving lives, and it's apparent that Connor doesn't feel he measures up to the man from whom he received half his DNA. Connor hears a conversation outside. It's another Superboy, one in the traditional costume, telling Ma and Pa Kent that he's here to replace Connor. Meanwhile, in their Florida HQ, the Doom Patrol, Robot Man, Negative Man, Elastic Girl, Grunt and Nudge, God knows where Vortex is, no one cares, are answering a trouble alert. They don't recognise the Beast Boy, who has shown up, which confuses him. But not as much as the fact that Rita Farr is alive. Her stupid purple hair goes unremarked upon, possibly because Beast Boy used to be purple himself. Back at the ranch, Kent Farm, Superboy Prime is being a pouty child, attacking Connor and endangering the Kents as he whines on and on about not being special anymore, about how Connor doesn't deserve to be put in his place on the new Earth that was born out of the crisis on Infinite Earths. Connor concentrates less on Prime's blathering and on the safety of his Uncle John and Aunt Martha. While Crypto, the Superdog, fights Prime, Connor sends a signal for help out to the Titans, desperately hoping somebody will respond. Then he opens his outer shirt and reveals the familiar black T-shirt and red chest logo. Prime may wear the traditional colours, but on this Earth, Connor Kent is the Boy of Steel. Back at the Doom Patrol's HQ, Gar is explaining that he's been having dreams about being a kid, hanging out with the patrol and watching them die. The chocolate-munching chief reveals that since a recent major tremor of sorts on a vibrational level within subspace, he's been having the same dream. The conversation is interrupted when Gar gets Connor's signal for help. Back at the fight, which is pretty much word-for-word contained in one issue of Infinite Crisis, Prime is throttling a bloodied Connor, but Superboy is smiling. He knows the cavalry is here. Not just the Titans, but the JSA and the Doom Patrol. "Titans together!" yells Gar. Wonder Girl, Cassie Sandsmark, rescues Connor from Prime's grasp with her magic lasso, and she and numbers would seem to make triumph inevitable. But Connor has had his face crushed. He may be dying. Dot, dot, dot. The enraged heroes pile on Prime, and Teen Titan Arrowette shoots him with a blue arrow that Speedy nicks from the Fortress of Solitude while getting a guided tour from Superman years ago. It is, of course, the Phantom Zone arrow. Into the zone goes Prime. He'll be trapped forever in the inescapable Kryptonian prison. Oh, yes. He pounds against the otherworldly barrier as heroes gather around the badly wounded Connor. Eventually, Prime breaks free and reality crumbles. Gar is surrounded by images of his earlier self and he screams. Boy, does he scream. Cliff shares the images of the patrols we once knew. As John Byrne's terrible revamp fades away. Goodbye, Nudge. Goodbye, Grunt. The chief theorizes that it's merely... The chief theorizes that it's just a warped history correcting itself, and the flashback images are their memories struggling to keep up. He then has the best line of the issue. It's all mega scientifically sound and quite the show. I wish I had some chocolate. This is immediately followed by the second best line, spoken by, I think it's Raven, I'm not sure with that hair, and it seems to be a meta commentary from Geoff Johns on John Byrne. Why is wrong with Beast Boy and the Doom Patrol? I sense a calming insanity among them, a happiness laced with disgust. To everybody else, the patrol is just in a daze. The fight continues as the heroes pursue Prime, and poor Panther loses her head. Then Wild Beast is killed. Risk has an arm torn off. Bushido is ripped in two. And if there's a more Geoff Johns crossover panel than the summation panel that follows, I'd like to see it. It just shows ripped heads, torn in half bodies, blood everywhere. It's just horrendous. Horrible. The Flashes drag Superboy Prime into the Speed Force, and that's where the Doom Patrol depart Titans. Well, for an issue or two. End of story.
Well, yeah. Excellent work there, Martin. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, so that's where the Doom Patrol gets redefined. And, as you said, Geoff Johns comes back in a couple of issues and does some more work on it just to redefine exactly where it went from there. Safe to say Geoff Johns is a long-term Doom Patrol fan. He had a letter in the Kupperberg run issue 5, mm-hmm. So before he even got into comics. So it's been something that he cares about. And certainly he's brought them back in the New 52. So, yeah, but... Yeah, it's pretty drastic stuff, but, you know, there's interesting stuff happening around the Doom Patrol in the midst of it, and it really is about saying, okay, the Byrne Patrol doesn't, you know, jibe with the original continuity, it ignores the Morrison run and things like that. Let's try and reconcile all of that into one thing. So, yeah. So I think it pulled it off in the midst of this crazy, gory crisis.
I think so. I mean, I enjoyed the issue for the way the Doom Patrol was fixed, because usually when a continuity ends, as it happens with the Legion of Superheroes every few years, there's a pretty clean break and, you know, heroes are one way one issue, another the next. So it seemed a bit of a treat to see them struggling to cope with memories changing as we watch.
Yeah. Yeah. So certainly if you're into the Doom Patrol, this issue is a highlight, I would say.
Yes.
And... We've already decided next episode we'll come back and do a bit more on what Johns did with the Doom Patrol and the Teen Titans after this. So that's the plan.
Yes.
Yeah. But, I mean, I would say, look, Infinite Crisis, it had some pretty good foreplay. Then it has some really weird, rough sex. but out of it came some very pretty babies. And I'm talking particularly about 52, the weekly series 52,
yes,
which was pretty much entirely writer-driven. And they were some good writers. It had Grant Morrison, Greg Rucker, Keith Giffen and Jeff Johns. And Mark Wade was in there too, wasn't he?
Yes.
Mark Wade as well. Giffen sort of led the art pretty much and did lots of layouts for it. But that is a fantastic series and that came directly out of it. I think we got some other good things like Greg Rucker's Checkmate, Secret Six. Secret Six came directly out of Infinite Crisis and the Villains United stuff.
Just wonderful stuff.
Yeah. So, you know, there's some good children that came from this joining.
You know what I realised? I realised I made a big error. When I was slagging off Countdown to Infinite Crisis, I was getting confused. I was thinking of the 52 weekly series, 52 issue series that followed 52. That Dan DiDio said was Countdown done, was 52 done right. Countdown to Infinite Crisis. Sorry, the special, actually, I did enjoy the special with Ted getting killed, despite Ted getting killed.
Yep.
I apologise, everybody.
You're thinking of the lead-up to Final Crisis, which was...
That's the one, yes. I was being assailed with memories of, from the multiverse, getting confused.
Yeah, no, I couldn't even start buying that one. Yeah, that had none of the art or craft or discipline of 52. Or the lead up to Infinite Crisis. So, yeah, best forgotten.
Definitely. So, what did you lads think of the actual the ultra violence in this issue?
Well, yeah, it's fairly ultra violent. It's and as you said, it pretty much recaps what happens in an issue of Infinite Crisis itself with the beheadings and the limbs flying everywhere and, you know, Crypto joining into the fight. The scene in Infinite Crisis itself that kind of annoyed me was Crypto getting involved and then getting kicked away. But, you know, it's not just normally kicking a dog away because that's not nice to begin with. But then he's bouncing along the streets of Smallville. And I just, that really annoyed me because I don't like violence to animals at the best of times. So, yeah, I think it was... I guess, you know, this was, what, 10 or so years ago that this came out. I guess it wasn't too out of place then, maybe. But looking at it now, it's still kind of, yeah, I found it over the top and, you know, a bit unnecessary.
I don't know. I'm not that bothered by the violence in it. I mean... It's weird when you look at all these DC events, like you pick one and you can see which titles were existing at the time because there's these weird versions of teams in there. Like, you know, there's, oh, this is the one with the weird Second Coming of the Outsiders and things like that. Or here are the New Guardians, etc. And it's kind of like an interesting snapshot of where things were. But one of the common things is, you know, quite often they clear the decks of some of these little weird characters that fit into teams that aren't everyone's favourites.
Mm-hmm.
So the, you know, the core characters seem to persist no matter what, but other course. Characters get wiped out periodically. So, you know, the Titans at this time had, was it Wildebeest, it had Panther, it had, I can't even remember the names of some of them, but, you know, clearing them out wasn't, Indigo and people like that, you know, getting rid of them, you know, it's just fodder for the spectacle, you know, it's not really sincere. It's not like... You know, and even the deaths that stuck, like Superboy Connor ends up getting killed. You know, but he comes back. You know, Bart disappears. He comes back. You know, Kid Flash. It's just one of those things. I mean, I think the weird thing about Infinite Crisis is just the determination that Superboy had to be the villain and Alexander Luthor had to be the villain as well. You know, they didn't have to be, you know. It's not consistent with anything that came before for either of them to make them suddenly, you know, homicidal nutcases who, you know, are trying to destroy the universe or, you know, make it back the way they want it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yes, I think John's tried to explain it by saying it was, you know, they'd just gone stir crazy watching the worlds for several years. But it just really seriously sullies the end of what was a superb crossover.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, it's not boring. It's not, you know.
Oh, definitely not. Reading it tonight, I was just like, this is so action-packed and there's so much going on in it, even if the story is a little bit of a head-scratcher. There's never a dull moment in it.
Yeah, and it certainly is epic in a way that some of the other DC crossovers, like Genesis or Day of Judgment and Millennium, just aren't.
Mm.
Yeah. So it's worth a read. It may be worth a borrow to some people, but I think it is worth a read.
It is. I mean, I read it originally in the monthly or however it was being published issues. And when I read it again a couple of months ago for this podcast, I found it just exhausting, you know. So much of it was a call back to, you know, the original Crisis, you know, going back to the Anti-Monitor's Tower and mm-hmm. big gatherings of, and I don't know, I think I enjoyed it more than not. There were some very, very good moments, but overall, you know, hurrah for what it did for the Doom Patrol. That's what I'll say.
Exactly. Yes.
All right. All right. So we'll wrap up Doomsplaining there. Mm-hmm. And maybe we'll move on to the Mailbag of Doom.
Okay.
Okay, so many years ago we asked the question of the week, what is the best bit of Infinite Crisis? So we got some responses and some commentary. So at Arch Enemy Comics, alias Saul Bishop, said, Superman and the Golden Age Superman beating the hell out of Superboy Prime. Yeah, because by that stage you really hated Superboy Prime.
Oh, yeah.
And he said, second place is Joker shooting Alexander Luthor, which is sort of like the punchline of the series where Alexander Luthor had organized all these villains, but he'd left the Joker out of the equation. And the Joker does not not being allowed to play. And so he is the one who actually finishes Luthor for the final dead for real moment.
Yeah. We heard from Aaron Long at Juice 005. His favorite bit was when Thanos assembles the Infinity Gauntlet and wipes out everyone in Crossed using Omega beams from Firestorm, and Archie was there.
I remember that.
I must have missed that page. I'll go back and read it all again. But thanks, Aaron.
Oh, dear. We heard from Astrakis One, who said, I didn't care much for it, but the entire Green Lantern Corps standing against Superboy Prime was kind of exciting.
Mm.
No, scratch that. It was, of course, Villains United, because we got Gail Simone's amazing Secret Six book out of it. Yeah, he heard that.
Yes. We heard from Ange at Dr. Ange 70. Ange is the man. He said it turns out that he didn't like a lot of Infinite Crisis. He enjoyed the flashbacks, but his favorite part was the Flashes uniting to defeat Superboy. Of course, this defeat didn't last long, but it had Johnny Quick and Max Mercury, and he provided some of his favorite panels from that. And yeah, I did like that, seeing all the Flashes gang up on him, because he deserved it.
We have from Moby One at Shmoby One. He said, I recall Infinite Crisis as being pretty dark. He's not wrong. I remember enjoying Villains United and the Secret Six side of things, though. So another vote for the Secret Six, which we echo.
We heard from Frack of the Endless at Fractures, and he said, easy, no contest. His favourite bit was when Batman and Superman were sort of arguing at the very start of the whole series, and Batman basically turns around to Superman and said, you know, people look up to you because you're meant to show them what's right. They need to be inspired, but let's face it, Superman, the last time you really inspired anyone was when you were dead.
Harsh.
Yeah. Yes. I reckon that's a bit of meta commentary about what they were doing with Superman after the death of Superman, because the books really went downhill after the reign of the Superman. We heard from Nicholas, and he said, "I just read Final Crisis. Will it ever end?" No. DC will always come back for crises.
Yes. We heard from former guest and friend of the show, Doug Zavisha, at D Zavisha, and he said, Black Adam's Three Stooges move on the Psycho Pirate with 100% less nyuk, nyuk, nyuk. I only flipped through, might reread later. Yeah, again, that was a bit of ultraviolence right there when Black Adam met up with the Psycho Pirate and took care of him right through the skull.
Yeah. But I really loved what they did with Black Adam after that in JSA and 52. So good stuff came from that. We heard from Greg Arujo at Garujo1, our friend. And he said, while I loathe Infinite Crisis and it began my general dislike of DC's output, I do like the conversation between Batman and Nightwing, which he provided a screenshot of. And that basically... they're talking about their history together, and they talk about, they're reminiscing basically about their friendship. And Batman says, the early years, I've forgotten. They were good for you, weren't they? And Dick says, the best. And it's a nice moment between Batman and Dick Grayson, whereas usually we're in full on into the Bat Dick era at this phase, where he was just nasty to all his supporting crew. So that was a nice change.
And finally, we heard from Keith Bowden at PluPerfectNemo. And Keith said, the best bit was not buying it. It's a bit harsh, but...
Where was mine? I can't remember what I said.
I think I cut yours out because you were on the show, so...
Quite right, too. It probably would have been the Phantom Zone arrow, not the stupidest thing ever at all.
Well, you are, well, I would say you are a Superman masochist with the fact that you stick with truth no matter what, things like that. But you're doing it full of service.
The only time I've dropped off Superman in the last probably 30-odd years was when Jeff Loeb was writing it and Ed McGuinness was drawing him as a balloon man. Couldn't bear it.
Wow.
Oh, golly.
All right, Paul, what was your favourite bit of... Infinite Crisis.
I think I love the build-up. I really enjoyed the OMAC project. Everything that started with Countdown to Infinite Crisis and, you know, Ted Kord investigating what's going on and no one else in the DC universe tweaking, and then he discovers that Maxwell Lord is a villain and pays the price. Everything from then on until the very start of Infinite Crisis was pretty exciting. It was a bit of a roller coaster ride. So I enjoyed the build up. Yeah.
Okay.
It was artfully done, and it would have been very hard to coordinate editorially, but I think it came down to the fact that the writers had a very clear picture of what they wanted to do and where it was going to go. And as with most things, the wheels fell off at the end, like, you know, the end of Greg Rucka's Wonder Woman run was not what he planned, I'm sure.
Right.
You know, there are all these things that he'd built up would Diana pay for murdering Max Lord, and, you know, what would happen with that? And that all just got brushed aside. Yeah, which is a real pity.
Okay. Yeah.
What about you, Mike?
For me, it was probably the epic scope of it all. Because, yeah, having not read any of the lead-up to it, this was all I had to go on. And, yeah, it's huge. It's, you know, on our Earth and multiple Earths, and it's out in space, and it's kind of batshit crazy in that aspect. And also the showing the sheer size of DC's, you know, roster of heroes. You know, every page you look at in those massive battles, there's some small character that either you know or that you've seen elsewhere, and you kind of think, oh, wow, they've got that guy and that guy, and oh, look, she's there too. So you might not, if you're a fan of those characters, that's great. Otherwise, you kind of, yeah, it's that kind of recognition that, oh, yeah, I haven't seen them in years. That's awesome. So yeah, there was that. And to me, there was also this odd, kind of, it wasn't really in the forefront of it all, but I had this sense of the whole legacy of, you know, the older heroes were almost passing things off to the next guard, the new generation, which I kind of like that as well. So, yeah, it's something I wish they would do more of, more legacy type stuff. But yeah, it's DC. So,
yeah. Yeah, and you've just reminded me, a little shout out to the role of the Brotherhood of Evil in it, because they, I think their big move is they're involved in dropping the gelatinous monster Chemo on Bloodhaven and destroying Bloodhaven. So super evil for them, really, a bit more evil
than they usually do. Recall a panel where Monsieur Mallar is piloting the plane, and Brain says to him, "Mallar, stop drooling on the controls." And he says, "Sorry, you know how excited I get with these sort of missions."
Yeah. And they also showed up in Villains United trying to take down the Secret Six at that stage. So, a little bit of Brotherhood of Evil in the mix too, which is always good. And more evil than normal.
Have you got any other thoughts, Martin, of what you did like about Infinite Crisis?
Well, I mean, I did enjoy the scope. And like yourself, I enjoyed seeing, you know, the many, many, many characters that don't normally show up.
Mm.
And I like that it did seem to have a proper vision behind it. I didn't agree with all the choices. But, you know, if you read the back matter in the collection and you see how many years they were preparing for this even before it started seeding into the published books, it was very impressive. They knew what they were doing, you know. And I just wish we saw that kind of editorial control these days. I mean, the last few years of DC Comics, yes, I mean, cluster something or other would probably be the word for it. But, it was a good read. But, I mean, one more thing on this Teen Titans issue, if I may. And I love the spread that Todd Nork did, where Beast Boy's having all the flashbacks.
Mm.
And if you notice, he's been very naughty and he's put Nudie Lodestone right in the centre, just by Garth. So you have to look at Nudie Lodestone. And he's put Flex Mentlo's crotch just by Garth's leg. And it's marvellous. Marvellous.
Might have to put a screenshot of that up online for a friend of the show. Yes. Anyway. Excellent point.
Ange will need to see that one.
Yes, of course.
Oh, dear. Okay, I think that's it for the Mailbag of Doom. And that's been quite an episode on Infinite Crisis. So thank you, guys.
Yes.
So, Mike, you want to do the sign-off?
Yes, well, that is it for our first proper show back of the year. We will be back next week. I promise you that. We will be back next week. So if you wish, you can contact us on Twitter at WFTPod. You can always email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. And we're also on the Waiting for Doom Facebook page. So next week, Paul, we are talking about Geoff Johns stuff on the Teen Titans, yes?
Yeah, so a few issues on from this. The next trade, I think it's, what about issue 38 or 39 or something? I'm just making it up. But yeah, so in preparation for that, we're going to ask people the question of the week. What is your favourite Geoff Johns work? So there is some good stuff there. If you hate Geoff Johns, there's still some good stuff there. But a lot of people love him. He is very popular for, you know, good or bad reasons, but he is. So I'm sure you've got a favourite Geoff Johns work if you think about it.
Excellent.
Or maybe not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Not that difficult, honestly.
It's the one where he maims someone.
Martin, big thanks to you for coming on the show this week and discussing Infinite Crisis with us. Been lovely having you on. And thanks, as always, for your support of the show and for joining us regularly online. Much appreciated.
Thank you. It's been a joy speaking to you. Thank you so much. Have a great day. Evening.
You too. Alrighty, guys. We will sign off for now. And we will catch you again next week for more Waiting for Doom.
Bye.